The kid stepped out onto the boardwalk and aimed at a man charging toward Milk Bennett's livery stable with a torch in his hand. As he was about to line up a shot on another torch wielder, a more immediate threat lunged at the kid. The form of a mounted gunman rode up. The rider missed, but the kid was ready for him. Another rider raced by, brandishing a torch. He never saw the kid, and that was his bad luck. A fierce gun battle was taking place in the next block as several of Levesey's men tried to overrun the townsmen who had taken cover behind a water trough. The defenders were about to be flanked, and as soon as that happened, it would be easy for the killers to cut them down. The kid ran along the street, heedless of the bullets flying every which way.
Hey!
Three of the attackers spun. That left him with an empty gun and no time to reload as another rider charged at him. The kid leaped aside and spotted Jared Tate suddenly step out from an alley. The kid scrambled to his feet and nodded to Tate.
Much obliged, Marshal. You've saved my life again.
Glad to do it. Where's Cantrell? Let's get that damn scum dog.
Tate thought he was fighting Brick Cantrell's gang again. Under the circumstances, it didn't matter. But the kid didn't want Tate getting too confused and start shooting innocent citizens.
Come on, Marshal. Let's head back to the trailblazer. We'll make our stand there.
Lead the way, deputy.
With Tate at his side, he raced toward the saloon. Gunmen charged them from both directions. The kid and Tate fired right and left, battling their way through. By the time they reached the trailblazer, only a few of Levesey's men were left to fight. They charged the saloon in a last-ditch attack. The kid and Tate swung around to meet them. Constance came down the steps, sliding fresh shells into the shotgun's chambers.
Is that all of them? Is it over?
We got them all right.
Tate turned to Constance, taking her by surprise as he put an arm around her shoulders and planted a kiss on her mouth.
Why, you old geezer!
Then Constance let the shotgun slip to the ground as she put both hands on Tate's face and pulled him closer.
Come here!
The kid turned away to let them share their moment. He thumbed fresh cartridges into his revolver and looked along the street. All the outlaws were down, although some were still alive. Smoke came from a couple of buildings, but the townspeople were already fighting those blazes. The kid thought they stood a good chance of bringing the flames under control. He wondered how many of the citizens had been killed in the fighting. It was a foregone conclusion the people of Copperhead Springs hadn't escaped without any casualties. The question was how bad the tragedy had turned out to be.
You bastard!
Having regained consciousness, Harlan Levesey burst out of the saloon with a gun in his hand. His face was contorted with hatred as he thrust the weapon at the kid. Levesey was too crazed to aim properly. Marshal Tate staggered.
Jared, no!
The kid didn't waste any time. The kid swung around to see Constance on her knees beside Tate's fallen form. Tears ran down her face.
Constance? Constance, what's wrong? Why are you crying?
Because you're shot, you damned old fool!
Yeah, is that all? I've been shot before, you know. Ooh.
His eyelids slid closed, but the smile remained on his face.
He'll be fine.
The kid, Constance, and a few others gathered in his front room.
Bullet nicked him in the side, that's all. Man his age, any bullet wound can be dangerous, but, well, it's my professional opinion. He'll be back on his feet in a few days.
That's mighty good to know, Doc. I was afraid the old coot had gone and gotten himself killed.
No, he should be all right. Unfortunately, I can't say the same for half a dozen other citizens.
An air of sorrow mitigated the relief they felt over Marshal Jared Tate's condition. People had died during the battle, including Milt Bennett. People who had seen him go down with a smoking gun in his hand said that despite his reservations about putting up a fight, the liveryman had battled as valiantly as anyone and personally accounted for a couple of hired killers before he fell. The others who had died would be mourned too, and no one would forget the sacrifice they had made to help free the town from the tyrannical grip of the Broken Spoke gunman. But that wouldn't bring them back. The kid and Constance went into the room where Marshal Riley Cumberland lay recuperating. His father, Bert, was with him, sitting beside the bed with his hands clasped together anxiously.
It's all over then, is it?
That's right. Harlan Levesey is dead, and so are most of his gunnies.
There's going to be a lot of trouble over this. Levesey had plenty of friends in high places.
I have a friend who knows some important folks, too. I'll send some wires. We'll see to it that the truth comes out.
The kid and Constance talked to Cumberland for a short time longer, then left to let the wounded marshal get some rest. As they walked back toward the Trailblazer, the kid realized it was only mid-morning. That seemed impossible, considering how much had already happened.
What are your plans once everything is settled down, kid?
I don't know. I started in this direction thinking I might get a riding job, but that idea sort of lost its appeal. Jared said he could get me a job at the Broken Spoke, but I've got a hunch whoever inherits it won't want to take me on.
Probably not. Si had a cousin back in Salina. I guess he'll get the spread now. Lord knows what he'll do with it. Probably sell it.
I didn't set out to kill Levesey. I thought maybe I could head off the trouble somehow.
You never had a chance in Hades of doing that. Harlan was too proud and too crazy to ever listen to reason. I hate to say it because I liked his daddy. But sometimes father and son are just more different than seems possible. So, you're at loose ends again?
I guess so.
Then maybe you could take Jared back to his daughter's place in Wichita, once he's healthy enough to travel.
I sort of had the idea he'd stay here. That maybe you would take care of him?
Believe me, I thought about it. It was good to see him again, and that old spark. Maybe some of it is still there. But that doesn't mean I'm suited to take on a responsibility like that. Anyway, it's good to pay a visit to the past now and then. But you can't live there, kid. All a person really has is today. Anyway, she's his daughter, and I guess she loves him. I'm sure she's worried half to death about him. If you're not headed any place in particular, well then, Wichita wouldn't be out of your way, would it?
Maybe not. But it would take a while to get there, and I'd have to ride herd on the marshal every step of the way.
You can do it! From what I've seen of you, you're a pretty capable young fella.
I'll give it some thought.
The kid spent the next 2 weeks in Copperhead Springs while Riley Cumberland got back on his feet. The county sheriff, who was as upset about the whole situation as Constance had predicted, assigned a deputy full-time to the settlement while Cumberland was recuperating. But the kid wanted to keep an eye on things himself. It wasn't that he didn't trust the sheriff, but the man was obviously skeptical of some of the claims made against Harlan Levesey. The arrival of a special investigator from the state capitol, prompted by a wire to the governor from Claudius Turnbuckle, went a long way toward settling things down. The Browning financial interests held stock in the railroad, a number of banks, and a couple of meatpacking plants, and the kid didn't feel the least bit guilty about wielding that influence when it was necessary. The investigator talked to just about everybody in town. When he was finished, he let the sheriff know his report to the governor would state it was his opinion the citizens of Copperhead Springs had acted in self-defense and had been perfectly justified in taking action against Harlan Levesey. It was hard to argue with that. The kid also sent a wire to Tate's daughter, Bertha Edwards, in Wichita. He wanted to let her know where her father was and that he was alive and well. The woman's response was a curt, perfunctory thank you, which caused the kid to frown slightly as he read it. He knew it was almost impossible to tell what someone was feeling from words printed on a telegraph flimsy, but he'd expected a more excited and relieved response from her. As for the former marshal himself, true to Doc Franklin's prediction, he was up and around in a couple of days after suffering that minor wound. He split his time between the Trailblazer and the marshal's office. Constance had given him a room on the saloon's second floor for sleeping, and she or one of her bartenders kept an eye on him all the time he wasn't with the kid. The arrangement worked out well. Tate didn't have a chance to go wandering off again. While they were all in the saloon one evening, the kid broached the idea of taking Tate back to his daughter's home in Wichita.
Wichita? Why would I want to go to Wichita?
Because that's where you live, Jared.
No, I live here in Copperhead Springs. I'm the marshal here.
We've talked about this before. You're not the marshal here anymore. You live in Wichita with your daughter.
Bertha? Why, she's just a little girl.
Oh, you've just got to trust me, honey. It'll be better for everybody if you let the kid here take you home.
Tate got a stubborn look on his face. Most of the time, he was friendly and willing to go along with whatever people said. But when he was challenged too much, he dug in his heels and wouldn't budge.
We'll talk about it later, Marshal.
Still in a huff, Tate got up and went over to the bar to talk to one of the bartenders. The kid and Constance watched him go.
This is liable to turn into a problem. I can't very well hog tie him, put him on a horse, and take him back to Wichita against his will.
I know. Even though that would be the best thing for him. Going home, I mean, not the hog tying part.
You know, I've been wondering. It's pretty obvious you and the Marshal were, well, more than just friends. But I haven't heard anything about him being married, and that daughter of his had to come from somewhere. You're not the...
Bertha's mama? Good Lord, no.
Well, then?
You're asking me to dredge up a lot of ancient history and gossip about it, kid. Funny, you didn't strike me as the type.
Indulge me. Maybe it'll help me figure out a way to talk Jared into going back to Wichita without giving trouble about it.
All right, all right. But I think you really just want to hear the juicy parts. Jared was married when he came here to Copperhead Springs to take the job as marshal. Brought a wife and a little girl with him. The wife's name was Priscilla. And although I hate to speak ill of the dead, the name suited her. She was a little Pris, sure enough.
So the marshal's a widower.
I'll get to that. You're the one who insisted on hearing this story, so just shut up and let me tell it my own way. Now, I can't even rightly blame Priscilla for being the way she was. Jared had dragged her all over the Great Plains, from one little cow town to another, while he was working as a lawman. Almost any woman was going to get tired of living like that.
You probably wouldn't have.
I said almost any woman. I never claimed to fit in with the rest of the herd. Anyway, almost as soon as they got here, you could tell there was trouble between them. But I never heard Jared say a bad word about Priscilla. The same wasn't true the other way around. And the girl, well, she was in a bad spot, I guess, and eventually she had to pick a side. She picked her mama.
I guess in a situation like that, it's not surprising Jared turned to somebody else for a little comfort.
Don't you ever say that again, or even think it. Jared Tate was my friend, yes, but he never laid a hand on me. Never said anything the least bit improper while his wife was still alive. He'd have staked himself to an anthill before he'd do something like that.
Sorry, I just figured...
Well, don't. Jared's an honorable man. Always has been and always will be, no matter what else has been taken away from him.
I guess something must have happened to Mrs. Tate. Did she get sick?
Something happened, all right. Brick Cantrell came to town.
Cantrell? The army deserter and outlaw the marshal captured?
That's right. You've heard about how Cantrell's bunch raided Copperhead Springs. What I didn't tell you was Priscilla Tate was hit by one of those bullets flying around during the fight.
So when Jared led the posse after Cantrell, he was avenging his wife, too.
Yeah, but he didn't know it at the time. He knew she was hurt, but she was still alive when he rode out after Cantrell. Some folks thought badly of him for that, I reckon. But for Jared, it was just a matter of having a job to do. Besides, he didn't know she wasn't going to pull through. She took a turn for the worse after he left with the posse. Priscilla was out of her head from the fever a lot of the time. I sat with her quite a bit. Wasn't much anybody could do for her once the poison started spreading through her body, except keep her cool and hope she could fight it off. She raved about how it was all Jared's fault. She said some other things, too. I swear, if you ever breathe a word of this to Jared or to anybody else, I'll hunt you down and make you sorry you were ever born, kid. I mean it. Especially don't tell Jared.
Not a word. Swear to God.
He won't be able to spare you from my wrath if you go to blabbing. Anyway, while Priscilla was out of her head, she said some things that made me wonder if, well, if Jared was really Bertha's daddy. Nothing I could be sure about, mind you. You can never really be sure about the ravings of somebody who's dying like that. But she said enough to make me wonder. It didn't really change anything, of course. Jared didn't know. He loved the girl like she was his own, and hell, maybe she is. I was the only one who knew, and I wasn't going to say anything. Priscilla's fever finally broke there at the last, but it was too late. She was too weak, and she slipped away. By the time Jared got back with Cantrell, she was already buried. Despite all the trouble between them, I think he nearly broke then. But he still had his duty. He delivered Cantrell to Fort Hayes himself.
He remembers that. I've heard him talking about it. But he never said anything to me about his wife dying about the same time.
Maybe there are some memories where it's a blessing to have them drift away from you. That's why I don't want you bringing up any of this with Jared. No point in stirring up a lot of old pain.
You're right about that.
After all that, after a year or so had passed, well, like I said, Jared and I had always been friendly. That was when he turned to me for a little comfort, as you put it, kid. But to tell the truth, I reckon he was comforting me as much as I was comforting him. You might not guess it to look at me, but it's never been easy being the big, brassy saloon keeper. In the minds of a lot of people, I'm not much better than a whore. Maybe what I did with Jared just confirmed that, but it never felt that way to me.
I'm sure it never did to him, either.
Jared started sending Bertha back to Wichita during the summers to visit with some of Priscilla's relatives. During one of those trips, when she was almost grown, she met a boy. And when she went back the next summer, he was waiting for her with a ring. They settled down there. He's a clerk in some lawyer's office. Jared stayed on here. He told me he decided Copperhead Springs was the last place he was going to wear a lawman's badge. Well, he was right about that. A few more years went by, and it started getting obvious he wasn't quite the man he used to be. It was a while before any of us realized how bad it had really gotten. It wasn't until he ran out in the street and started shooting one day, yelling that the Cantrell gang was attacking.
And there were no outlaws?
Not a one. Jared had taken on Riley Cumberland as a deputy, sort of as a favor to Bert, since the two of them were friends and Riley was a pretty shiftless kid. Bert was afraid he might go off and become an outlaw if he didn't have something to keep him on the straight and narrow. Once we got Jared calmed down after that little shooting spree, and nobody was hurt, thank God, the town council got together and asked Riley to take over as marshal. Plenty of people doubted the kind of job he'd do, but give him credit. He's been a good lawman for us.
Other than knuckling under to Harlan Levesey.
He was in a bad spot. One man couldn't do anything against all those gunnies. Although you sort of did, didn't you?
I had a lot of help. The rest of the town deserves more credit than I do.
Most of them would still be cowering in their beds every time the broken spoke hands came around, if not for you. They never would have backed Riley's play like that, and he knew it. He tried to keep it the best way he could so the fewest people got hurt.
That's about all he could do. How'd you talk Jared into going to live with his daughter in Wichita?
It wasn't easy, I can tell you that. I wound up having to take him myself. I'd do it again, but I'm too old for a trip like that. Besides, I don't know if I could stand it again.
That's why you asked me to do it.
Yeah. If that makes me a bad person.
It doesn't.
Well, that's the story. Good enough gossip for you?
More like tragedy in some respects.
Life usually is. Here he comes.
Jared ambled back over to the table, carrying a mug of beer. He sat down next to Constance.
What have you two been talking about?
I was just telling the kid about how I got a letter from Bertha, saying she sure would like for you to come for a visit, Jared.
Bertha? It's been a long time since I've seen her and Tim. I really ought to pay them a visit.
Where is it they live? Wichita?
That's right.
Well, if you're going over there, Marshal, I've got a big favor to ask of you.
Sure. Go ahead, kid.
You think it would be all right if I rode along with you? I'm headed in that direction myself, and the company would be nice on a long trip like that. Not to mention I'd feel a mite safer having a lawman along.
I suppose that just makes sense. And I'd admire to have your company too, kid. When do you want to go?
The kid glanced at Constance. There were still a few hours of daylight left, and he didn't want to waste this opportunity. It might be easier to keep Tate from getting lost in the past if they were away from Copperhead Springs.
I travel pretty light. I can gather up my gear, pick up a few supplies, and be ready to ride in half an hour.
I like that. No point in burning daylight. I'll be ready too.
Constance hugged them before they mounted up to ride away. Not surprisingly, the embrace she gave Tate lingered longer than the one the kid got, which he didn't mind. It was possible Constance would never see her old friend and lover again. Tears shone in her eyes as she turned back to the kid, but with her usual hard-boiled attitude, she managed not to shed them.
Don't you let anything happen to him. If you do, I'll never forgive you, and you don't want me holding a grudge against you.
No, I don't think I do. Don't worry.
I swear, Constance, you talk like I'm a little kid who needs somebody to look after me. You don't have to be like that. I'm fine. Nothing wrong with me. I'm as sharp as a tack, just like I always was.
Don't get your feathers ruffled. I was about to tell you the same thing about him. We owe the kid a lot. I don't want anything to happen to him.
Oh, I understand now. Well, like he told you, don't worry. We'll look after each other.
Sounds like a good plan.
With their farewells said, the kid and Tate swung up onto their saddles and rode out of Copperhead Springs.
I'm looking forward to seeing my daughter and her family, but I already know it'll be good to get back home after our visit.
The kid didn't say anything. There was a good possibility Jared Tate would never set foot in Copperhead Springs again, but he didn't see any reason to point that out. Even if he did, Tate would soon forget it. They were able to cover only a few miles before the hour grew late enough to start looking for a good campsite. The kid hadn't expected to travel very far. He just wanted to get started while Tate's mind seemed to be fairly clear and the old lawman was being cooperative. They spread their bedrolls in a small grassy hollow. There was no water nearby, but their canteens were full, so that wasn't a problem. The cafe in Copperhead Springs had sent food with them, so they didn't even have to worry about preparing a meal. But the kid brewed a pot of coffee.
Do you think we need to take turns stand and watch?
You think that's necessary?
Well, you never know when a Pawnee or a Kiowa raiding party might come along.
The kid figured it had been at least 10 years, maybe longer, since any war parties had haunted those parts. Except in isolated places along the Mexican border where Apaches still raided from time to time, as the kid knew from personal experience, the threat of Indian warfare was over.
I haven't heard about any trouble from hostiles recently, Marshal. I think we'll be fine.
There are bands of roving bandits, too. Brick Cantrell and his renegades are out there somewhere, and they could strike any time.
That buckskin horse of mine is a mighty good sentry. If any other horses come around, he'll let us know. Same with Indians or wild animals.
Well, in that case, I guess we might as well turn in and get a good night's sleep.
That's what I was thinking.
The kid dozed off easily, a habit frontiersmen developed, and he had no idea how long he had been asleep when something roused him. His eyes came open, and he was awake instantly, in time to see a dark shape looming over him. The kid threw himself to the side. He threw the blankets off and swept his leg around, catching the calves of the man who just tried to kill him. As the kid surged to his feet, he grabbed the Colt from the holster he'd left lying close beside him. He almost fired, but instead stepped forward and swung his leg in a kick, catching the gunman's wrist and knocking the man's weapon flying. He stepped back and leveled his gun.
Don't move!
You better go ahead and kill me, Cantrell. If you don't, I'll ventilate your mangy hide as soon as I get the chance.
The kid stood with his heart slugging in his chest, trying to wrap his brain around the fact that it was Tate who had just tried to blow his brains out and come mighty close to succeeding.
Marshal, listen to me. I'm not Brick Cantrell. It's me, Kid Morgan. You know me.
I never heard of any Kid Morgan. I've been on your trail for weeks, Cantrell.
Tate sat up and rubbed his wrist where the kid had kicked him.
You're a deserter and an outlaw, and I'm gonna take you in.
The kid holstered his Colt and backed off to the glowing embers of their campfire. Keeping a close eye on Tate, he knelt and stirred the embers back to life, feeding in some buffalo chips to make the flames grow brighter.
Look at me, Marshal. I don't know what Brick Cantrell looked like, but you can tell I'm not him.
You could be wearing a disguise.
No, you know better. You know who I am, if you'll just stop and think about it.
The glow from the fire lit up Tate's weathered old face, which was more haggard than usual. He stared across at the kid, who couldn't tell if he saw any signs of recognition in the old lawman's eyes or not.
Kid? Is that you?
That's right. You remember me now? Kid Morgan? We've known each other for almost 3 weeks, and we left Copperhead Springs together this afternoon. We're on our way to Wichita so you can visit your daughter and her husband.
Copperhead Springs. I know that name. I used to live there.
You were the marshal there for years, but you're retired now. Remember?
Of course I remember. What, you think I'm some sort of idiot?
No, sir. Not at all.
There were some men. Bad men, and we fought side by side against them. And Constance was there.
That's right.
Did you just kick me? What the hell'd you go and do that for?
I'm sorry, Marshal. That was my mistake. Reckon I was dreaming or something and woke up thinking you were a bad hombre.
Maybe I better move my bedroll a little farther away if you're prone to doing things like that.
No, it won't happen again. Why don't you go back to your bedroll and try to get some sleep? We'll be on the trail a long time tomorrow.
Can I trust you? No more crazy shenanigans?
I give you my word on it, Marshal.
All right, then.
The next morning, Tate seemed to have no memory of the incident. From time to time, he moved his hand around and frowned at his wrist, as if he were trying to remember how he might have hurt himself, but he didn't say anything about it. The kid had been awake first, and taken Tate's holster and shell belt and put them away, hoping if the marshal didn't see them, he wouldn't think to ask about the gun. Surely he hadn't gone around packing iron when he lived with his daughter. Wichita was a big city. The kid figured they probably had laws about such things. He decided not to say anything else about Tate being a frontier lawman, not wanting to stir up those memories. The marshal seemed to be in a good mood, like they were on some sort of outing. The kid supposed that was true. Tate had gone off on an adventure, and now he was returning home. They made breakfast of the beef, beans, and biscuits left over from what they'd had the night before, then saddled up and rode out, following the trail leading east. Tate talked about everything under the sun, mostly about people the kid had never heard of. He didn't mind. It seemed to keep Tate happy. In the middle of the day, they stopped for lunch, then pushed on again. They had seen a few riders in the distance during the day, probably cowboys working on the ranches in the area, but it was a couple of hours after noon before they encountered anyone on the trail. The kid saw something up ahead and realized it was a wagon stopped at the side of the rough road. The vehicle was canted over, appearing to have lost a wheel. Two men stood beside the wagon, looking unhappily at it, as if they were trying to figure out what to do. The kid was no expert on such things, but as he and Tate rode up, he looked at the wagon and decided the nut had come off the left rear wheel, allowing the wheel to slip off its hub. As long as the nut wasn't lost, or if they had an extra one, the problem wouldn't be too difficult to remedy.
Howdy. Can we give you fellas a hand?
The two men had heard them approaching, but didn't turn to look at them until they stopped. One of them was big and shaggy like a bear, wearing a duster and a battered old top hat. He carried two revolvers tucked behind a sash wrapped around his ample middle. The other man was smaller, reminding the kid of a weasel with his sharp face and mean eyes. He was hatless, with leather trousers and a wool shirt. What looked like an old cap and ball pistol rode in a holster at his waist. The kid didn't like the looks of either man. When he glanced at the mules hitched to the wagon, he saw scars of old wounds on their backs where they had been whipped repeatedly. He knew mules could be balky and frustrating, but the sort of cruelty represented by those marks rubbed him the wrong way.
I lost a wheel. I guess if you want to help me lift the wagon, my partner can slip it back on.
All right.
As the kid dismounted, he glanced at the back of the wagon. It was loaded with bulky cargo covered by canvas and tied down. What they were hauling was none of his business, of course. But the furtive looks the smaller man kept shooting back and forth between him and the wagon made him a little leery of trouble. The kid and the big man stepped to the drooping corner of the vehicle. The kid was on the side of the wagon, the other man around at the rear. They bent to get a good hold.
Where are you fellas headed?
Wichita.
They got set.
All right.
Heave! All right. Selman, get the wheel back on there.
I don't think so.
The man called Selman stepped back quickly, pulled his old percussion pistol from its holster, and swung the barrel back and forth between the kid and Tate.
That old man's the marshal from Copperhead Springs. Don't you recognize him, Benny? They're on to us, and we're gonna have to kill them both.
What are you doing? Put down that gun, you fool.
Selman, you shouldn't oughta...
It was too late for that. Selman had drawn his gun, and the kid could tell he was ready to shoot. The man's piggish little eyes gleamed with the desire to kill. The kid let go of the wagon and jerked his body backward. The kid thought Selman's shot had struck Benny. Then a glance told him the wagon's weight had been too much for Benny to hold up himself. He lost his grip and the rear corner of the wagon had fallen on his foot. With Benny no threat for the moment, the kid concentrated on Selman. The man tried to swing the pistol in line again, but he was too slow by far. Suddenly, Marshal Tate launched himself out of the saddle and tackled Selman from behind. Selman twisted around and threw an elbow into Tate's chest. Like a snake, he writhed to the side and started to swing the percussion pistol at Tate's head like a club. Before the heavy weapon landed, the kid's boot came down on Selman's wrist, pinning it to the ground. His fingers opened, releasing the gun. The kid reached down with his left hand and plucked the gun from Selman's hand. He pointed the Colt still in his right hand at Selman's face.
You'd better stop fussing. I'm in no mood for this. What did I tell you about that? Now I'm going to step back and you're going to sit up and stay right there. Because if you don't, I'll shoot you. Don't doubt that for a second.
The kid stepped back, keeping Selman covered.
Marshal, are you all right?
Tate climbed slowly to his feet and brushed the dust off his clothes.
I'm fine. You think those two have learned their lesson, kid?
I don't know. Let's see what they were so worried about.
The kid tucked Selman's revolver behind his gun belt and moved closer to the wagon. Reaching into the back to grasp the canvas cover, he threw aside one corner and revealed several wooden crates packed with bottles and jugs full of clear liquid.
A load of moonshine. That's what this was all about? You were willing to shoot us over some damned white lightning?
It's illegal. And that old fella's a lawman. I remember seeing him in Copperhead Springs wearing a badge. For all I know, you're one of those damn star packers too, mister.
Well, you're behind the times, as well as mistaken. Marshal Tate's retired, and even if he wasn't, as long as you stayed out of Copperhead Springs with that stuff, he wouldn't have any reason to arrest you. And I'm not a lawman at all. Just a man who gets mighty upset when somebody shoots a gun at him.
Aw, you ain't hurt. Benny and me, we're the ones in pain.
Benny more than you, I'd say, since that wagon full of hooch fell on his foot.
Oh, God, it hurts!
See? What do you think we ought to do about that?
We, ought to get it off of him, I reckon.
How are we going to do that? You and I might be able to lift the wagon enough for him to pull his foot out, but I'd have to holster my gun. And after the stunt you just pulled, I'm not sure I want to do that.
I'm not armed. I can't do anything else, I swear. Help me get that thing off of him, mister, please.
You stand where I can see you. Marshal, keep an eye on him, too. And sing out if he looks like he's going to try anything funny.
I sure will.
The kid pouched his iron and moved around Benny. One at a time, he pulled the guns from behind the sash around the big man's waist, tossing them well out of reach. He got a grip on the wagon bed.
On three. One, two, three!
He and Selman heaved on the wagon, lifting it enough for Benny to grab hold of his leg and drag his foot out from under it. Benny sat down hard, unable to stand up. Selman scrambled over to him.
All right, let's get that boot off of there. So we can see how bad you hurt. That's all right, ain't it?
Go ahead.
Selman worked the boot off. The sock was soaked with blood. Selman peeled that off as well and revealed an ugly gash in Benny's foot. It wasn't mangled as much as the kid had expected. Since the other wheels were still on the wagon, not all of its weight had come down on Benny's foot.
Oh, I'm plumb ruined. I'll never be able to walk again.
I think you will, but not if you keep going around trying to kill people. You won't have to worry about your foot because you'll get yourself shot.
Are you going to turn us over to the law?
It's not my responsibility to put moonshiners out of business. As for taking a shot at me, well, maybe by the time I'm through with you, you'll have been punished enough without bringing the law into this.
What else are you going to do? You already pert near busted my wrist and Benny's foot's all messed up.
That's Benny's fault for letting go of the wagon. As for what else I'm going to do, those mules are coming with us.
You can't do that. Them mules are ours. That'd be stealing.
It's not as bad as trying to shoot somebody. I don't like the way you've treated them.
I told you not to whip those jugheads tonight much.
Please shut up! You're a jughead your own self. You're gonna leave us here with no team and a wheel off the wagon?
That's right.
What'll we do with all that shine?
I'd get a bottle and use some of it to clean that wound on Benny's foot. Then you can sit around and drink the rest of it for all I care.
This ain't right. It ain't fair.
Save your breath. I'd be grateful. I thought about burning it.
Selman looked like he wanted to say something else, but he kept his mouth shut.
Keep watching them, Marshal.
The kid went to the front of the wagon to unhitch the mules. He tied their harnesses together so they would be easier to lead.
All right, Marshal. I guess we're ready to go. I'll lead these mules if you can lead our pack horses.
Sure, I can do that.
They got mounted up and then paused beside the spot where Selman and Benny were sitting on the ground behind the wagon.
Anybody takes a shot at me, I generally go ahead and kill him right then and there. I've made an exception in your case, but if I ever see you again and your hand is anywhere near a gun when I do, I won't wait to see what you're planning to do with it. I'll just go ahead and shoot you. You remember that?
I'll remember.
I know what you're thinking. You let this fester and gnaw at you and tell yourself that one of these days you'll get even with me. But you won't. You'll just get dead.
The kid and Tate rode away, leaving the wagon and the two moonshiners behind. Selman wrapped a makeshift bandage around Benny's injured foot. He had cleaned up the wound as best he could.
Gonna find him and kill him. Try standing on that.
Benny used the wagon to help him stand up.
I can't stand on it. I think it's broken.
Well, you're just gonna have to put up with it. There ain't nothing else I can do for you.
Well, maybe you can make me a crutch.
Out of what? We're 10 miles or more from anywhere. Even with a crutch, how you gonna walk that far? You can't. I gotta leave you here, Benny, while I go for help.
You ain't gonna leave me for good, are you?
No, of course not. Just for a while. Anyway, we can't both go off and leave this here load of moonshine unprotected. Hell, we got all our money tied up in it. You gotta stay here and watch over it. Oh, that damn varmint tossed your guns out into the grass. I'll go find him.
Can you help me sit down first?
Selman rolled his eyes, but he took hold of Benny's arm and supported him.
All right, now. You take it nice and easy.
Benny sat down on the ground next to the wagon out of the trail. Selman found his friend's two revolvers and brought them back. He handed one of them to Benny.
I'm keeping one of these guns since that polecat rode off with mine.
That's fine. I don't mind sharing my shooting irons.
Oh, I wasn't asking. Now, I'm counting on you, Benny. You can't let nothing happen to this hooch.
I'll take care of it. Selman, you ain't really going after that fella, are you? He pretty much said he'd shoot you on sight if he ever saw you again.
After what happened to you, don't you want the score settled with him?
Well, sure I would. I don't know if it's worth getting killed over. Anyway, we don't even know who he is. Never said his name.
We know he's traveling with that old Marshal Tate from Copperhead Springs. Lots of folks in these parts know Tate, or at least know of him. He was a regular town tamer for a good long while.
Reckon he's still pretty tough, though, judging by the way he tackled you.
He took me by surprise, is all, dammit.
Benny looked down. He and Selman had been working together long enough for him to know it wasn't wise to push the smaller man too far. Selman had a loco streak in him and didn't always bother to hold it in.
Anyway, I'll settle up with those fellas later. Right now, I gotta do something about this mess we're in. I'll walk to Rutherford's place and get some help there.
Oh, that'll take you half the night.
You got any better ideas?
No, I reckon I don't. You know me, Selman, I ain't much of one for ideas.
Oh, I know. I'm used to doing the thinking for both of us. So you just stay here and I'll be back.
Well, I ain't going nowhere, not with this busted foot.
Cowboys hated to walk. To a cowboy's way of thinking, any chore that couldn't be done from horseback was a chore not worth doing. Selman, on the other hand, had never been a cowboy. The work struck him as being way too hard for the amount of money a fellow could earn. Even so, he didn't care much for walking either, and he liked it less by the time Rutherford's store came into view. He'd hoped somebody would come along with a buggy or a wagon and give him a ride. Even somebody on horseback who'd let him ride double would have been welcome. But Selman seemed to be the only one who was headed for Rutherford's place. When he spotted the lights up ahead, he felt the impulse to run. The sooner he got there, the sooner he could get off his feet. But he couldn't stand the extra punishment running caused, so he kept moving at the same slow, steady pace, gradually drawing closer to the store. The moon had risen, and along with the stars, it provided enough light for him to see the low, rambling sod structure and a number of horses in the corral off to the side. Selman hoped he could take some of those horses back to the wagon, as well as somebody who'd help him fix the busted wheel. Selman stepped through the open doorway into the large, smoky bar room. Nearly all the space was given over to tables and a long plank bar, supported by barrels of whiskey and beer. The left end of the room sported a row of curtained-off cubicles where three or four soiled doves plied their trade. At the moment, only a couple of tables had customers seated at them. A desultory poker game was going on at one of them, while at the other, several men were drinking in morose silence. Nearly a dozen men were crowded up to the bar, where Rutherford and his fat Indian wife served them. Rutherford spotted Selman, and his bushy eyebrows lifted in surprise.
I was expecting you earlier today, Selman. What happened?
Benny and me ran into some trouble. Our wagon lost a wheel, then some fellas came along, tried to kill us, and stole our mules.
Good Lord! Well, you look like you could use a drink.
Yeah, and a place to sit. I walked the whole way up here, a good 12 miles. Ah.
Well, you just sit down there at the table, and I'll bring you a glass.
Much obliged.
It was a great relief to get the weight off his feet. He looked down at his boots and frowned. He was almost afraid to look at the damage done to his feet. Besides, if he took the boots off, he might not be able to get them back on. The smartest thing was to leave them alone until he rescued Benny and got the wagon to the saloon. Rutherford came over with a glass and a bottle. The whiskey wasn't as good as the shine Selman and Benny brewed, but Selman was happy to get it.
Tell me what happened.
We were headed up here to make that delivery to you when we lost a nut off one of the back wheels. Damn wheel came all the way off before we realized what was going on.
Well, shoot. Benny's big enough. He should have been able to pick up the wagon so you could put the wheel back on.
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you? But he couldn't raise it high enough by himself, And if I helped him, there wasn't anybody to slip the wheel back on. Then a couple of fellas came riding along.
The ones who stole your mules?
That's right. But before they did that, we sort of had a run-in with those fellas. One of them was that old gunfighting marshal from over at Copperhead Springs.
What are you talking about? Riley Cumberland's the marshal at Copperhead Springs. I mean, at least he was the last time I heard.
No. I mean old Marshal Tate.
Jared Tate? Why, he hadn't been a lawman for 4 or 5 years, maybe longer.
Well, I didn't know that, all right. I got better things to do with my time than keep up on who's wearing a badge and who ain't.
Well, let me get this straight. You started a fight with that old retired marshal because you were afraid he was going to arrest you for hauling moonshine?
It wasn't just him. He had some young hotshot with him. Could have been a federal man for all I know.
Oh, so you got roughed up by a retired star packer and a kid, and then they stole your mules. You are quite the desperado, Selman. You really are.
I'll settle that score with him one of these days. You can bet on that, Ab.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do now?
Well, I thought maybe you'd let me borrow some horses so I can go back down there and fetch Benny and the wagon.
Is Benny all right?
Yeah, the wagon sort of fell on his foot.
I'm sorry, go on.
I need a team, and I need somebody to help me get that wheel back on the wagon. Then we can finish delivering that load of shine to you.
Well, if I gotta loan you some horses and lend you a hand, I'll expect a nice discount on the price.
We're already giving you the rock bottom price, Ab.
Well, that's all right. If you're not ready to deal, you can find some help somewhere else.
All right. We'll knock some off the price.
A third?
A third? We won't make no money at all at that price. I was thinking 5%.
25.
They haggled back and forth for a few minutes. And Selman actually forgot about how much his feet hurt as he got caught up in the negotiating. They settled on 20%. Rutherford wouldn't budge from that price.
We'll head down there to get Benny in the wagon first thing in the morning.
We can't go tonight?
Hell no. Night's half gone. I plan on sleeping in my own bed. Tomorrow morning, soon enough.
A shadow fell over the table, causing him to look up. A shaggy-haired man in a buckskin jacket and high-crowned felt hat stood there. The man had a soup strainer mustache hanging over his mouth, under a prominent beak of a nose. Selman didn't recognize him.
Something I can do for you, mister?
Did I hear you mention Marshal Jared Tate a few minutes ago?
What if I did? He a friend of yours?
A friend of mine? Not hardly. I didn't know he was anywhere around these parts.
Well, he is. And he ain't a lawman no more. Ain't much better than an old owl hoot if you ask me. The way him and that other fella jumped me and my part and hurt us and stole our mules.
That don't sound like Tate. He was always so upright, acted like he had a ramrod instead of a spine. And he hid behind that badge of his when he killed my brother. I've been waiting years to get even with him for that.
Well, I don't know nothing about that. All I know is he sure mistreated us.
Well, how about where he was bound for? You know that?
All right, take it easy, Carl. You better answer the question.
Wichita. The young fella said they were headed for Wichita.
Wichita's a pretty good ride from here. It'll take some time to get there.
What are you thinking about doing?
Nothing you want to know about.
Carl put a coin on the table.
That'll pay what I owe you. I'm riding out.
Well, suit yourself.
Oh, I intend to.
The Kid and Marshal Tate reached Dodge City the next day. Since the vast buffalo herds that once covered the prairie for seemingly endless miles were all gone, and the railroads had extended their reach into Texas, ending the cattle drive era, Dodge had lost its two main reasons for being. Its boom days were long over, but the settlement clung to existence as a small town serving the needs of the farms and ranches in the surrounding area. Travelers sometimes stopped there, and the Kid and Tate fell into that category. They rode into town late in the afternoon.
I hate to admit it, Kid, but I'm not as young as I used to be. Sleeping out on the trail is hard on these old bones of mine. You reckon we could get rooms in the hotel and spend the night here? Sleep in a real bed?
I don't see why not. We're not in any big hurry to get where we're going. We can pick up a few more supplies while we're here, too.
They turned their horses toward the Dodge House. The hotel had its own stable out back, so they didn't have to hunt up a livery. After they'd rented adjoining rooms, the Kid turned the horses over to the hostler and carried their gear upstairs. He found Tate standing at the window in one of the rooms, looking out at the street.
Lots of memories in this town. The Mastersons, the Earps. It was a wild place in the old days, you know, but at the same time, so vital, so alive. You never knew what was going to happen in Dodge. Now it just seems, sleepy. Sort of like me, I guess.
It'll be getting dark soon. Why don't we go hunt up some supper?
We can go to Delmonico's. Best steaks you'll find this side of Kansas City.
Sure, Marshal. Let's go.
As it turned out, Delmonico's was not only still there, but the food was excellent. Steak, potatoes, greens, corn on the cob, huge fluffy rolls with steam rising from them when torn open, peach cobbler, all washed down with fine coffee. Tate had been right. For a sleepy little former cow town, the meal was a lot better than the kid expected.
I'd like to take a stroll around the town, little kid, if you don't mind.
Sure, that's fine.
You can go back to the hotel if you want. I'll be fine.
Why don't you show me around? I'd really like to hear about the old days when you were a peace officer here and Dodge City was the queen of the prairie.
You shouldn't ask an old man to reminisce. You might get more than you bargained for.
I'll take my chances.